Be on the firing line.
Good afternoon, everybody. We'll call the House Resources Committee to order. In attendance today, we have Representative Capsner, Gatto, Olson, Ramirez, Samuel, Seaton, Elkins, and Crawford. And online, Representative Ledoux, are you with us from Kodiak?
I certainly am.
Okay, thank you very much. We have a full committee here. We're continuing the amendment process and then moving on to the debate on House Bill 488. And I believe that we left off at amendment number 9 to be revisited by Representative Capsner. Representative Capsner.
Thank you. I'd like to offer amendment number 9.
And I will object and go ahead, or I can have Mr. Dickinson kind of come and give up the...
Okay. Well, I'll just give the reasons why I'm forwarding the amendment. What this amendment does is it deletes what used to be Section 20 in the first bill, and as it was revised for RCS, it's Section 27. And it added new subsections to 4355-150. And a number of different people asked questions to the administration about why this was in there. Some people felt that it was a Christmas tree provision, that it isn't essential to the bill, to the tax, and it's regarding the royalty settlement methodology. And I think that there is concern. I know when consultant Eason spoke with us, he was concerned that there would be ways that we could end up, the state could end up losing money with this section in there. So that's why I'm offering that. I don't think it is crucial to the petroleum production tax. I think it could be done elsewhere. So I just thought we ought to take it out.
Okay. And if I can get Mr. Dickinson, this wasn't something that we did, so I'd like to hear what you got to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Dickinson, former director of the Tax Division, currently working in the administration on this matter. If I might respond, I think Representative Capsner is one of her two observations I'll agree with entirely, which is that this is not an essential part of the PPT. What this is it's born out of a frustration that I felt as an administrator that we have one group of very skillful folks sitting on the fifth floor and another group sitting on the eighth floor of the Atwood Building in Anchorage, and these dedicated folks spend their time looking at the exact same set of transactions, one with a set of royalty glasses on and one with a set of tax glasses on. I think the analogy, I hope I don't offend anyone by this, but you often hear that our DNA is 95% the same as between a household fly and a human being, but it's the 5% can really make a difference. And I think it's the same thing. The royalty rules and the tax rules are very similar. They're both trying to get to the actual cost of transportation between the market and the point of valuation. Over time, due to a various set of circumstances, differences have emerged, and so we have folks who are dedicated to pursuing those two paths. The reason this bill is in here is it gives the commissioner the discretion through regulations to use other means of valuation other than the single standard set out in the law. They would all have to, the commissioner would make sure that they all met the tests that we have, and clearly if there's one set of transactions already being computed and it meets the quality standards of the state, it does what they're supposed to do, we felt it was appropriate to simply do that calculation once as opposed to doing it twice. If we had unlimited resources, I would absolutely say it's always good to have a second person checking it, but we don't. And we thought that this was a useful way of taking a set of one set of work being done by one set of folks in the state and applying it, killing two birds with one stone, if I might.
So your section takes what we use for royalty and just uses the same value for tax, opposed to potentially having two different calculations?
Mr. Chairman, what it really does is it gives the commissioner the authority to use that second royalty value. It does not require him to. He or she may look at that and say, for whatever reasons, they're different, but she could write regulations, and those regulations could incorporate aspects or all of the royalty valuations.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Gatto.
Thanks. I want to make sure I understand exactly what you said, because on page 16, line 25, and just prior to it, the department may allow the producer, subject to limitations prescribed by the department, as to the frequency of making elections, et cetera, et cetera. But it clearly identifies the producer, not the commissioner.
Representative Gatto, through the chair, that's correct. What we say here is that the commissioner will set up the rules, and then presumably they'll present an election to the taxpayer, who can then opt to do it under one or the other set. And that's the way we structured that.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Dan, can you give us some kind of an estimate of what the different dollar amounts would be if you took one set or the other set, maybe historically or something like that?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I do not have those numbers in front of me. I believe that historically over time they would be very close. Part of the problem in comparing them is, and one of the reasons why you had all these rules for the commissioner is, when the royalty settlement agreements were entered into in the early 90s, they only covered existing leases. So we've had a bunch of production on the North Slope that isn't covered by them. And when you set your averages in, you'd have to be careful that you're comparing apples and oranges. I think they're fundamentally, if I can quickly identify for you the major differences, one of them is under law for tax, under 020F, we set the tax value either at what the oil and gas is sold for or the prevailing value. Under the royalty settlement agreements that are now in existence, the starting point is simply a spot price, a fair value of the crude, as defined by international market or by national markers. So that is a difference. Clearly, whenever you have a higher of, as we have in the tax statute, you're probably going to come up with a higher number than you do when you simply have one value applied consistently. My argument to you on that would be, the differences are not large, and I believe that the provisions for 020F were written before there were transparent markets, and I believe that looking at a transparent marker and trying to use that to value the petroleum when it's landed on the West Coast, in fact, makes a lot of sense. That's one potential difference. And if the commissioner felt that the marker was not doing as it could, that could be one of the standards that he could write in and say, we will not accept a royalty value if that marker is not good. Second difference has to do with vessels and how the return on and of a vessel is captured. Vessel's a long-lived asset. You spend a lot, and you're going to use it for 20 years. The mechanics of that are different between the two. And then the third difference, of course, and is one we'd have to correct for, is field costs are a portion of a royalty settlement. They are not part of the tax. We would make sure that they did not come in through the royalty settlement agreements. Yes.
So the current system is that we take the higher up. Is that correct? And then under this system, it would be left up to the commissioner to just determine based on the producer's choice of which?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. Under the current tax law, under 020F, the department may use the higher of prevailing value or the sales price. It's not required to. And typically what we have done in our regulations is create a safe harbor. In other words, if the price that it's sold for is 3 cents less than our marker, we're not going to go in and make that adjustment because there's a daily price and folks may negotiate something and stuff moves around. If it was $2 less, clearly we would go in and substitute the prevailing value for that transaction. So that's how 020F works under current statute. What would be replaced is a system where if we decided to allow, if the commissioner decided to allow a royalty valuation, all the way down to destination, at least as I envision it, clearly it could be other things, the commissioner would say as long as that royalty settlement agreement is in place, you may elect to use either that or the set of tax rules. You cannot switch back and forth month to month. You can't sort of every month see which one's the higher and use that. Now, that's not in here. Clearly the commissioner could decide, we'll have it be every month. I can't imagine that happening. But what we try to do is set out the broad outlines, and then the commissioner by regulation would establish the methodologies.
And follow, I'm just trying to get some estimated value potential difference between these two that we're asking the commissioner to take his authority and just decide whether he's going to do royalty, I mean, and then fix that over time, or and it's per producer, so it, you know, you could have one set of rules by one and another set for another group. And I'm trying to, you know, I'm not trying to limit the discretion of the commissioner, but I also don't want him put him in the position of having, you know, millions of dollars of differential that he might be assigning to one company either.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I agree. Standards are always important in a matter like this. I don't have those numbers at my fingertips. Perhaps I could get back to you later on the dollar difference. I guess what I would believe is, since, you know, we could certainly look backwards and say, if it had been in place, what would have happened? I believe the purpose of giving a regulatory discretion to the commissioner is to allow him or her to follow the changes in the market, to follow what happens when DNR settlements change. There are reopener processes in those so that things can be renegotiated. If parties can't renegotiate, they go to an arbitration. I think the Department of Law has been fairly clear on this. You know, you can't let the taxpayer sort of choose their own, you know, sort of say, well, here's how much tax I'd like to pay. You know, there have to be rules there. And our notion was that if there's a method of calculating wellhead value that's already in place and already makes sense, why have a parallel system?
Thank you.
Any further questions from Mr. Dickinson? I'm going to maintain my objection. I would hate as a politician to sit here and pretend that I know more than people that do this completely for a living. Representative Crawford, do you have a question? And this won't affect how the royalty valuation is done. It's just to say the revenue can choose that method, which is already set up in place.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. This would not affect the royalty value at all.
Okay, so the DNR doesn't care. You can use their number or not use their number. Okay. Representative Gatto.
Thank you. I guess one of the concerns is that we have the commissioner who may or may not do something. In your opinion, is it better to have something set in concrete and not have a commissioner, as commissioners change, administrations change, somebody's favorable, somebody's opposed? Does this lead us into this level of uncertainty and making people suspect for various reasons? Or should we just leave it set in concrete and then change it at when it's needed to be changed?
Yeah. Representative Gatto, through the chair, I think you've hit on something that's a constant tension. How specific are the directions you give to the commissioner, given that this kind of thing only happens sort of once a generation? We typically can't come in and make small technical changes in a bill. Once folks look into this, they clearly want to understand everything that's going on, and that's appropriate. So conditions change, and what I hope we try to do is strike a balance between giving the commissioner enough direction so that it really reflects what the legislature wants, and giving him or her enough discretion to act accordingly. And you know, what's the right balance? I don't know. We tried to strike that here. I would say that clearly the kinds of decisions that a commissioner can make just simply in terms of how much resources go to auditing, what you do with audits once you've gotten them, whether you're going to settle those audits or pursue them to the bitter end through all the court systems, those kinds of decisions probably are going to have greater import in the final analysis than the direction that is here in Section 27.
I see.
Any further questions for Mr. Dickinson?
I have one.
Representative Capshner.
So I'd like to hear you say again, this is not a fundamental piece of House Bill 488, and it doesn't have to be in there.
Representative Capshner, the fundamental economic of encouraging exploration and then getting a piece of the high side when that exploration produces a lot of barrels and a lot of revenues for companies is not affected by this. That is correct. I think the fundamental ideas the administration tried to put in here will not be affected by this.
Any other questions for Mr. Dickinson?
Representative Seaton. Mr. Dickinson, no matter... I mean, if this amendment's defeated, I would presume that you will make these calculations and have them available for the next committee referral as to what those differentials would be and what that is. Is that correct?
Representative Steedman, we can do that, yes.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Madam Clerk, can you call the roll on amendment number 9?
Representative Kempner?
Yes.
Representative Elkin?
Pass.
Representative Ledoux? Representative Crawford?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Seaton?
No.
Representative Gatto?
No.
Co-Chair Ramirez?
No.
Co-Chair Samuels?
No.
Representative Seaton? I mean, Representative.
Just vote twice.
Can you speak into the microphone?
Representative Ledoux, are you with us?
Ocean spray.
Two yeses and five.
Yes, I am with you.
Yes, and taking a roll call vote on amendment number 9.
No.
Two yeses.
Did Representative Elkins vote?
Representative Elkins, I think, passed.
You is a viewer passed? Okay.
I think she got it right.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, and amendment number 9 has failed to pass the committee. The next in order, I don't believe that Representative 11 is going to be offered. You have renumbered that 18, I believe.
Somebody renumbered it.
Okay, fair enough.
I'll pass on 13.
13 will not be offered. We're up to amendment number 14, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move amendment number 14.
And for discussion, I will object.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number 14 allows the deduction of expenses and the generation of credits based on a calendar year. And so it goes back to allows the entire calendar year from January 1st, 2006 to be used for those expenses and deductions, credits.
Are there any questions on amendment number 14?
Bless you.
I will remove my objection to amendment number 14. Is there any further objection to amendment 14? Seeing none, amendment 14 carries. Moving on. Amendment number 15, Representative Seaman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move amendment number 15.
And I will object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number 15 tries to get at the intent of our anticipation that at very high oil prices there would be an equal split between the state and the producers. And what we have is, you'll see in the crux of this is a line 11 through 13. And of course the way that surtax is calculated is deductible against the PPT, so it actually equals 80% of the increasing percentage rate. So to get to a 50% of the net, we actually have the total percentage going to 37.5%, and that equals 30% of the net. So the 20% plus 30% means the state would get half and the producers would get half. And this takes place at $110 a barrel. So this would leave in the existing 0.3% per dollar escalating starting at $50 and would not affect the deductibility of those from the PPT, but would start at 110 and we would just immediately go to the equal split of net.
Okay, does everybody understand amendment number 15?
I have a small technical question. As the amendment reads, it says page 4, line 13 through 19. I think that should say lines 14 through 19.
Oh, and
Mr. Yeah, Mr. Seaton.
Yeah, I would like to say that this is a conceptual amendment based on why, as well as the previous amendment, because these were based off of why, and we have done some amending, but
The drafter will fix that. If it could get to the exact point, Representative Kapsner, you said it should. What was the line number again?
14. If we delete line 13, it'll cut out a section.
Cut out five words from a previous sentence.
Okay. And I think the drafter can take care of that. Conceptually, are there any other questions on Amendment Number 15? I'll remove my objection to Number 15. Is there any other objection to Amendment 15? Seeing none, Amendment 15 carries. Moving on, Amendment 16, Representative Crawford.
I would move conceptual Amendment Number 16 because...
I'll object for the purpose of discussion, Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've tried to make this amendment several times, and there are problems getting exactly what I want written into this, basically because there's such a difference between severance taxes and net profits taxes that it's really hard to write this into a net profits based tax. What I wanted to accomplish by this was some safety and protection for the state at low oil prices. And I wanted to have a minimum floor, a minimum tax of 6% that we wouldn't go below, so that the state still has some protection at the times when we need it the most. And back in 1986 to 89, we were in a serious bind, so that's when they redid the ELF the last time, so that there was protection at the low end, and we gave up a lot of money at the high end. Now, granted, we're trying to fix some of the problems that we incurred at the time by going to that, but that still doesn't fix the problem about what happens when we're down in the $20 to $30 barrel range, or worse yet, if we're below $20 a barrel. Well, Dan Dickinson says that this amendment still doesn't get me there, so I just want to make it a conceptual amendment that we have a 6% floor so that we don't go below that level of taxation, even at low prices, so that we have that protection.
6% of the gross?
Let's see. Based on the gross value of the oil and gas at the point of production.
Thank you. Representative Brammers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Complex sentence.
Mr. Chairman, I bought some restaurants out of bankruptcy in the year 1991, May 6, 1991, the Food Factory restaurants up in Fairbanks. And one of the restaurants was located in the Bentley Mall in Fairbanks. And the most onerous component of that lease was that it contained a percentage rent provision. And to this day, 15 years later, it's still one of the worst things that I felt I've ever inherited in the transactions that I've done. And quite simply, it said that there was a minimum amount of that I had the rental payment due or the shopping mall operator would be able to participate in the percentage rent when it exceeded, I think it was 7.5% of sales at the time. And what that meant was that the shopping mall got the minimum amount of rent when times were bad, and then they got the percentage of rent, which was always greater than the rent when times were good. And I always objected to that a lot along the lines of our discussion yesterday of how we felt about retroactivity when it was the IRS reaching back into our pockets. And I just have a fundamental objection to one-way transactions. And one of the things that I'm most proud of in House Bill 488 that we're crafting is I think that this committee has been very diligent and very mindful of its responsibility to participate to a significant extent when times are good in sharing the windfalls that are generated by the oil and gas industry. And I want to make sure that we, for my sake, that we don't break that that trust, that partnership, if you will, by excluding our participation when times are bad. We have heard here from folks at BP that at $22.50 they lose money on a barrel of oil. Now, notwithstanding the fact that some of that is the tariff for shipping that oil down the TAPS line that they are an owner on. I'm not naive to that. I do believe that if we're going to share in the bounties of high oil prices, that we have to assume some risk during low oil prices. So with the great deference to the maker of this amendment, I'm going to oppose it. But I certainly appreciate his point, but I feel like we're getting it on the high end, and we have to assume some risk on the lower end. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other comments on Amendment number 16? I would echo the co-chairman. I realize that the problems if prices start to tank, that we have taken some risk, and I think one of the big ways to mitigate that is to make absolutely sure that when we're starting to make money right now, that we do not spend every last nickel of the money that we make, so that we look not only now but 20 years from now, as things start to decline even more, with revenues that we've turned our one-time resource into stocks and bonds, if you will. And the floor, I guess I've got a fundamental disagreement also. We've moved to or we're moving to, if the legislation passes, a system that we take the royalty off the top, so we still have the royalty, you still have the corporate income taxes, which will also deteriorate with lower prices. You have the property taxes, and then you have cost recovery. And with a floor, what we're saying is, after we take our royalty, if cost recovery doesn't generate any profits, we're still going to tax you. And to me, that's a fundamental problem. If we want to take some of the high end, and I understand the problem of a future legislature, Representative Crawford, I understand that. But if we're going to take some of the high end, we can't take the high end and then take the low end also. We did try to get hold of some economists, if you can believe that, to try to say if we put a floor on a tax, what would be the trade-off, and what would we have to give up on the high end to end up in the same economic condition over the long run? And I've gotten several answers back. None of them are, as we've heard for the last month now, none of them picked a figure, but it was problematic. One of the answers that came back was at 70, actually. If you stopped the progressivity at 70 and putting the floor in, and to me, I think that I would rather take some more of the risks rather than putting the floor on there. So with that, I will maintain my objection to Amendment 16. Are there any other questions on Amendment 16? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we just have to look at our past performance and look at history to know that we're going to run into a problem. Our history is that we don't do a good job of saving money in times of when we're flush. I believe that future legislators are going to look back at this day and say, what were those guys thinking? And I hope, Mr. Chairman, that you and I aren't a couple of those guys.
I hope so too, Representative Crawford.
Looking at each other and say, oh, I told you so, and I know. I think that if we don't put protection for the state in at the low end, we will rue the day. Thank you.
Yeah, and one other comment. I sincerely appreciate Representative Crawford bringing the subject forward, which was not, quite frankly, was not brought up. We went into a lot of details on a lot of numbers for the past month, and we never got into the substance of talking the risk reward on the low end. So I appreciate this, and no matter what the fate of this amendment is, I think as it goes through the process, I appreciate the subject coming up because it's something that that the legislature as an entity needs to look at going forward on what will you do when the price of oil goes to $20 or $25 a barrel. Any other comments on Amendment 16? Madam Clerk, you call the roll.
No.
Representative Crawford?
Yes.
Representative Gatto?
No.
Representative Kapsner?
Yes.
Representative Elkin?
No.
Representative Ledoux?
Paul.
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Co-Chair Samuels?
No.
Co-Chair Ramos?
No.
So Amendment 16 has failed to pass the House, but I will continue also. At the end of the day, we will probably draft a letter, and I'll probably try to get input from all of the committee members on issues that got raised that either didn't pass an amendment or weren't offered amendments, but issues that came up they should be aware of, and I think this is probably one of the most important ones.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Ramos.
While you're on that subject, I'd like to remind you that I'd like to again remind the committee to bring up Representative Kapsner's issue on the energy fund that we talked about yesterday, because were oil to hit $110 a barrel in the amendment that we just passed, there would be a lot of devastation amongst homeowners and business owners across the state of Alaska, particularly those still using oil number one or number two diesel.
Thank you. Moving on, we are on to Amendment number 17. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move conceptual amendment number 17.
That's out of order. I object. Strenuously.
Mr. Chairman, this apparently rewrites the bill. I think for the most basic of reasons, we should keep oil and gas separate because they're two separate animals. And I believe that if we leave gas in this bill as it's currently written, we will severely damage our competitiveness for our future. I have no idea whether we will ever get to any other step or part down the road that we've been promised is coming in the next few weeks. The first time I asked this question, they said, "Don't worry about a thing. We'll have it to you in 3 weeks. You'll understand. It'll all be clear to you then." Well, we're almost at the three-week part, point right now, and I haven't seen anything yet. And I have a degree of skepticism that's born out of the last 6 years here about when things come and what will be there. And when people tell me not to worry myself, I think that's time to really start to worry. So I believe, even though it's a very difficult amendment to write, I'd like to put forth this conceptual amendment to separate oil from gas and leave the gas in the current way we tax it.
Okay. Any comments on Amendment 17? As we've had the discussions here quite a bit, both in private and some here at the committee, once again, back to the basic concept of the bill itself, if we move towards take royalty and the next step in the process is you have cost recovery, it becomes administratively extremely difficult, would be putting it lightly, to say you have hydrocarbons coming out of a hole in the ground, and how do you allocate the costs between the two without without getting gamed to the point where it'd be almost an absurdity. You've got some gas that gets reinjected. What's it worth? How do you value it? How do you allocate the costs? There will be an amendment coming up, I believe amendment number 19 by Representative Ramis, that will address, I believe, some of your concerns, not all of your concerns, but it, like I said, it essentially takes the bill and does it in a complete rewrite, and with that, I would maintain my objection to that. So are there any other discussion on Amendment 17? Amendment number 19 has not been distributed yet, I don't believe. There's no other discussion, Madam Clerk, on Amendment 17. Could you call the roll?
Representative Gatto.
No.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Ledoux.
No.
Representative Crawford.
Yes.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Seaton.
No.
Representative Kapsner.
Yes.
Co-Chair Ramis.
No.
Co-Chair Samuels.
No. Amendment 17 has failed to pass the committee. Amendment number 18, which yesterday was discussed as 11A. We had bifurcated 11 into A and B, and we wanted some exact language, and now we have it. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move new amendment number 18, which relates to 11A, as we discussed yesterday.
I will object for the purposes of discussion.
Oh. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe that the state should be on the hook to subsidize in any way a catastrophic oil spill similar to the Exxon Valdez or other oil spills. I mean, the definition written is for a catastrophic oil spill leaves them lots of room for smaller oil spills, but this is for a big one, and also any damages that or settlements that are incurred. Just believe that we shouldn't be subsidizing their mistakes, and feel strongly that this should be in the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I've got a couple of questions for you, and if you can't answer them, perhaps we can get Mr. Dickinson to outline it. But first of all, the companies that operate Clean Seas, that they now invest in oil spill response cleanup things right now. I would think that since we require them to have those things, I don't know what they are, boats and booms and that type of stuff. Are you suggesting that we don't allow them to be written off because they are there in preparation for a catastrophic oil spill, which may never happen? And the second question is, I guess, the definition of the catastrophic. When somebody shot the hole in the pipeline, when the guy shot the hole in the pipeline, that wasn't the fault of TAPS, the owners of TAPS, any of that. And yet they would have expenses. I'm assuming that you would allow them to recoup their costs from that cleanup. But I guess just some general clarification on exactly what they'd be able to recoup, especially since some of the money has now already been expended, and I'm sure that they continue to expend money to upkeep those type of operations.
Mr. Chairman, it's my intent not to change current law, just to make sure that it's included under the new form of taxation that we have now. And I'd be glad for Mr. Dickinson to come up here and talk about some of the things that you've just brought up. It wasn't my intent to say that they couldn't charge off expenses if somebody shot a hole through the pipeline. Or an act of God, but I don't see that in the amendment. My instructions to the drafter was to try not to change the current law, just to stay with what we have.
Okay, Mr. Dickinson, and I guess follow up on the questions also. Then, how does this relate to who's on the hook for a cleanup if a hole gets shot? Is it Alyeska Pipeline, which we have not addressed anything to do with Alyeska Pipeline? They are not a producer or an explorer versus the producers and explorers. And vis-a-vis, and then, you know, let's say another Exxon Valdez happened. Was it the company? Does it go through Alyeska? How exactly would this work? I tend to agree that we should not allow an oil company that has an Exxon Valdez happen to write off their expenses on that. I wholeheartedly agree with that, but the devil's in the details on this, so how would it work?
Mr. Chairman, let me respond to several questions there. I hope I get them all. The way that we currently administer, and again, this will be downstream, is Clean Seas or a similar organization would be an allowable deduction. In other words, what you spend to be ready, clearly it was not intended to make that more expensive. So what folks are ready, where we have gotten into some issues is how those co-ops work when payments are made in and then when receipts come back. So there have been some audit issues, but the fundamental notion here is those co-ops, the funding of them is a deductible expense. For purposes of calculating net value, this would now make it, calculating gross value, this would then apply that to net value. To use the next question, was a question, what happens in Alyeska? What will happen in that situation is those costs will then get bundled into the tariff for future years. The things that Alyeska does currently for prevention or for mitigation, the things they have on standby will be part of the tariff.
So if somebody shoots a hole in the pipeline again, the tariff goes up, and therefore the transportation costs go up.
Representative Hamill, through the chair, I mean, let me just say, that's what the situation is set up, that your actual costs will become part of the tariff adjustment.
Okay.
I cannot speak for the specifics. If there's, a shipper has to come in and ask for that, or a carrier has to come in and ask for those costs to be brought in, and those can be reviewed by regulatory bodies. But in general, I can't imagine them disallowing an actual cost.
Okay. And then walk us through what happens if it was another Exxon Valdez type thing, and how that relates to both Alyeska and the deduction of costs under the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, my recollection is that there were issues about whether this was in the whose bailiwick the spill occurred in, and I'm not going to speak to that because I'm not sure. But in general, if it is a downstream cost, and it's a catastrophic oil spill, which I believe is 100,000 barrels or more, this would say you could not deduct those for calculating your net, and now this would extend it, your gross, and now this would extend it to say you cannot use it for calculating your net as well. So those could not be used.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Dickinson on amendment number 18?
Yeah.
Representative Gatto.
If the catastrophic spill was earthquake-related or terrorism-related, it's still fixed that 100,000 barrels, it doesn't matter how it happened?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, that is correct. And actually, let me clarify my answer. And maybe Representative Crawford can jump in. We looked at this statute last night together. One condition is 100,000, or it also could be any spill which the governor determined was an imminent threat to property. Or I don't forget, but there was also a discretionary standard, but it was in addition. I don't think there was an ability to look at 100,000 and say it wasn't.
Representative Seaton.
And just to be clear, what we've got here is the marine and inland waters. So this is not if there's a bullet hole in the pipeline, or even if there's corrosion in the pipeline and it's not in the water or marine waters, then it doesn't apply anyway. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that's correct. I mean, I believe inland water of the state can be a fairly expansive set of definitions. But
okay. Any other discussion on Amendment 18? I will remove my objection to Amendment number 18. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, Amendment 18 carries. Moving on. Amendment number 19, Representative Ramos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to move Amendment number 19.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mr. Chairman, yesterday, I think we made an excellent decision to separate the progressivity for oil from gas, because clearly these two hydrocarbons react to different marketplaces and different cataclysmic events around the world. And again, to reference Hurricane Katrina, although we saw some oil shock, we saw that natural gas prices quadrupled from $5 to near $15, and it's taken a long time for them to come back to, it's triple. And it's taken some time to see natural gas prices come back down into the $7 range now. And the same thing could be may be true in the out years for the price of oil, as is related to some of the instability in Nigeria, Venezuela. We don't yet know, Representative Olson, what's going to happen in Libya.
Keeps me awake.
Depends on the ads.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Whether Conoco runs ads in Libya or not. And so my concern yesterday was that we were subjecting the price of natural gas and the state's ability to tax natural gas to market conditions that could affect the price of oil. And I think the committee made the right decision to separate those out. But I feel, Mr. Chairman, that our work here would not be done if we did not introduce a progressivity system that was applicable to natural gas. And I consulted with Pedro Van Mieres last night and asked him to come up with a formula, which he produced for me. And I have the secret formula here, Mr. Chairman. I had it drafted today. I'm going to actually pass this around just so folks can see it in a mathematical formula, because I found it easier to conceptually grasp. I didn't make any copies of this, but you might make a. It's a mathematical formula, so it's easier, I think, to see as a mathematical formula. The thought process behind it is identical to what we did with progressivity, but it adopts different numbers. Mr. Chairman, because we anticipate that that we may have natural gas for sale in the state of Alaska in large quantities sometime in the next 15 years, and House Bill 488 or its equivalent in the other body may be around 15 years from now and be applicable to some extent. And so what I attempted to do is to apply a formula progressivity that mirrors the formula, but it changes the numbers. And when we went through natural gas issues, the stress price that was always referenced was $3.50 per million BTU. And now we see natural gas is in the low sevens, and during the Hurricane Katrina and the days subsequent that we saw natural gas prices at well over $15 per million BTUs. Thank you very much. We selected a figure of $8 per million BTU. And tied it to the Henry Hub, which is the same kind of a standard that West Texas Intermediate is when it comes to the price of natural gas. We selected it at $8 per million BTU, but as we did with the West Texas Intermediate, we removed the dollar increment from it and just converted it into a number for the purposes of creating a formula. So you will see that it is the Henry Hub minus 8 in the same way that the WTI was WTI minus 50, because that was the benchmark that we tied the progressivity to, was when West Texas Intermediate was at 50. And this would increase by 2 percentage points for every dollar, or I presume, and it would be my intent here, that a conceptual amendment that this would be for the increments moving from $8 through $9, and it wouldn't require to reach the next dollar to be a trigger point because the price of gas is much more condensed. And its volatility between $8 and $10 is much more significant. I'll remind the committee that the ratio is generally 1 to 6 or 6 to 1, depending on which way you're going between gas and oil. So a $1 move in the price of a million BTUs of gas would be the equivalent of $6 in the movement of a price of a barrel of oil. So we would multiply for every dollar increase by 2% until we had achieved a 30% tax, which would kick in at $23 per million BTUs. That would get us to the 50% equivalent that would have been in the equivalent at $150 per barrel. And Representative Seaton, be happy if you want to take an at ease to give you some time to formulate a subsequent amendment to mirror the oil shock amendment that you created, because I recognize you may want to do that, or you may want to adopt an amendment after this. But I think that this protects the state in the same way it introduces the progressivity formula as House Bill 488 moves to House Finance. It gives them the opportunity to explore what the ramifications are for having a progressivity formula for natural gas, and I think it's responsible for the Resource Committee to plug in a progressivity formula for natural gas that is separate and apart from oil. And then, Mr. Chair, that should that concludes my presentation, Amendment Number 19.
And it would operate, Representative Ramos, it would operate the same way deductible off of the PPT. It would operate the same way as oil, except for the trigger point is $8 gas, Henry Hub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is correct. So the tax paid on the progressivity on natural gas would become a deductible expense against the PPT.
Any other questions on Amendment Number 19?
One question.
Representative Olson.
Line 14. Would it read a little cleaner if we had at less than instead of not more than?
Is Rob Mintz with us? Can he give us, I think he was the drafter of this. Is he with us online?
Mr. Mintz, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
And did you hear the question?
Not very well. I wonder if it could be repeated.
Representative Olson?
Line 14, would it read cleaner if we had at less than? At the beginning, Section 1?
Well, I just followed the same format that was in the existing bill, which said not more than. I mean, it comes out the same. What this is saying, I mean, if you subtract 8 from 8, you get 0, and if you subtract if it's less than 0, we still want it to be 0. I think that it works either way, but this is just consistent with the existing bill language.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions? And a seat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if, you know, we've always been talking about MCF and all. Is this the way that the price is currently under British thermal units at Henry Hub, or is it for MCF?
Mr. Chairman, was that a question for me?
I think so.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, yes, my understanding is that the Henry Hub prices are related to million BTU, even though at first, I was a little concerned because our production tax statute specifies that gas is measured in terms of 1,000 cubic feet. However, since this is just the Henry Hub price is only used for purposes of the index, and the index, all it does is affect the tax rate, it doesn't matter. There's no problem in the fact that there are two different units.
Thank you.
Any questions, Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, can we have just a brief at ease while I talk to the sponsor?
Take it at ease. Bring the Resources Committee back to order. We were on discussions regarding Amendment Number 19 by Representative Ramis. I don't know what.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I feel even more strongly about Amendment Number 19 after taking a break. That's my speech.
You don't get any more breaks.
Is there any other discussion on Amendment Number 19? I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objection to Amendment Number 19? Seeing none, Amendment Number 19 is carried. Moving on to Amendment Number 20, Representative Ramers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment Number 20.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Mr. Chairman, because I'm anticipating a little speech from you after we wind up the amendment phase.
little is the key word.
Yes, sir. I'd just like to say it's been a long 4 weeks, but I'm grateful to every member of this committee, and I think that we have crafted an excellent document to pass on to finance. And the only thing that I was at all troubled by, notwithstanding heavy oil and the Cook Inlet and some of the other issues that we've elected to let finance address, is I was troubled that we were so careful to continue to incentivize the explorers, and that in many of the improvements that we crafted to the governor's piece of legislation, I'm afraid that we may have taken a backward step with the explorers. So Amendment Number 20 simply adds a couple of million dollars per full year, and then some fractional amounts for the 2006 year and for the year 2016. To the credit, the tax credit that is produced annually, and I recognize that this benefits producers as well as explorers. But I think it's a good amendment, and that it continues to send the right signal to the explorers, to Anadarko and Pioneer and some of the other folks that are out there. So this moves the annual credit from $10 million up to $12 million per full year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions on Amendment Number 20? If members remember correctly, this was
73.
Was the $73 million, which was actually a 14.6 tax. We lowered it to 10, and we're going back to 12. I just had one second. I want to see how the language works. Page 24.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Seaton.
Just a quick question for the sponsor. So this takes an equivalence of an allowance on what amount?
Representative Ramers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton, it would be the equivalent of a $60 million credit down from the $73 million that was in the governor's legislation. And would get the producers back to, or the explorers back to a little bit of a better place, so that we, as was explained to us by, I think, Daniel Johnson, it puts a smile on the explorers' faces.
It's a bigger smile than it was 10 seconds ago.
$2 million per year smile, Mr. Chairman.
So, is there any other debate on Amendment Number 20?
Yes,
Representative Seaton.
I just want to make sure that this credit is available for every producer, right, or every participant?
Producer.
Every producer.
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, for better or for worse, yes, everybody benefits equally.
It's non-tradable, non-transferable.
Non-saleable.
Can't sell it.
Can't carry it forward.
Can't carry it forward. You made money and deduct for the first $12 million of expenses. Is there any further debate on Amendment Number 20?
Just a question.
Representative Gatto.
What's special on line 10 about the year 2016?
There is a sunset on this provision. There's a 10-year sunset on this provision.
And so the $3 million applies to one-fourth of the, I'm sorry, just a portion of the year then?
Yes. through the effective date that we had chosen. That is the portion of that year. Any other questions on Amendment 20? With that, I'll remove my objection to Amendment 20. Is there any further objection to Amendment number 20? Seeing none, Amendment number 20 carries. We're having right now distributed amongst us is Amendment number 21. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Move number, Amendment number 21, conceptual.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is basically amendment to number amendment number 19 that we just passed. And what this does is mirrors what we did for oil in the progressivity. It changes the line from 23 to 18, which was the equivalent of the 110 barrel in BTUs amounts for oil. And it changes the next line, the index at 15, to the census deductible to the 18.75, which gives the equal split.
Okay. Any more debate on amendment number 21? With that, I'll remove my objection to amendment number 21. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, amendment number 21 carries. Are there any further amendments to House Bill 488? Representative Capser?
There was some curiosity as to why I didn't move amendment number 9. No, not amendment number 9. Amendment number 13?
13.
Which the amendment, if offered, would have taken the tax up to 2520. I drafted the bill, the amendment, mostly wanting to recognize the many hours of testimony that we heard from economists and recognizing that most of them said that it wouldn't, having a tax that started at 2520 would not deter investment. And also recognizing that at $60 a barrel, that would bring in about $600 million more per year. But in deference to the amendment that was passed by Representative Seaton, number 15, which when the average price goes to $110 per barrel, the tax rate would be 37.5. I think that's a good concession, and I, having spoken with colleagues, the votes weren't there, so I decided not to move the amendment.
Okay. Thank you. Well, there being no other amendments, is debate on House Bill 488? Another week, perhaps? Are there any comments on House Bill 488? Representative Crawford?
Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to do it now or do it later when you try to move the bill. It makes no difference to me.
Why don't we get a motion to move the bill out of committee, Representative Rammers?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I'm not good at moving bills. I never move bills. I move that we move
CSHB 48, yeah. Version Y.
Maybe you should do it, Carl.
Would you, Ms. Representative Gatto, could you help a brother out?
Be happy to. Mr. Chair, I move CS for House Bill 488 Resources Version Y from committee with as amended with individual recommendations and attached.
Big fiscal note.
I don't know how to probably phrase it.
Okay. I'll object for purposes of discussion, Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You saved me from objecting. And I understand that it's going to be for purposes of discussion. Mr. Chairman, I think you understand from my comments over the last several days where I'm coming from. For a number of reasons, I don't agree with doing it this way. I didn't agree with the fact right from the get-go that the governor went out and negotiated an oil tax with the producers, because I didn't think he had the authority to do so. In fact, he had explicit instructions not to negotiate oil taxes in the context of a gas pipeline. Chose to do that anyway. I know that the chairman has explained many times that this is separate, that it stand alone, but every time we talk about standalone, but in a few weeks we'll understand all the other pieces when we see the gas contract. I haven't seen the other pieces yet, and I don't understand the big picture, and I don't agree with a net profits base tax, because generally I think that it's not as easily verifiable, and I believe that we're going to be setting ourselves up for years of litigation trying to figure out what all the terms mean. And just as we went through years of litigation when we set up the severance tax, we're still going through some of those court battles. Not all the settlements have been made yet after all these years. I said yesterday that all the efforts that we're making to amend this bill was putting perfume on the pig. Several people said, no, that's lipstick on the pig. I don't care whether you put perfume on the pig or lipstick on the pig or a skirt on the pig, it's still a pig. And I just don't agree with going away from something easily verifiable. And the testimony that we got, if some of the these world-renowned consultants had their choice in the matter, they would use a graduated or progressive type severance tax because it's so much more easily verifiable. I think that would have been the proper way to go. And I understand that you're honestly trying to do the very best job you can, given the parameters that the governor's given us to debate on. But I'm opposed to it and will remain opposed to it.
Okay. Fair enough. Any other debate on House Bill 488? There's a couple of things that I kind of regret that we didn't not get to, but I don't feel that they should have been part of this legislation. The heavy oil piece, which I've talked to several members, including Representative Crawford, and Representative Coring, about making sure that we do incentivize it. We just didn't feel it was appropriate to put those two pieces together into this bill. And I didn't agree with everything that was in the CS to begin with. I don't agree with everything that was in the CS leaving the committee, but that is the way I think the legislative process worked pretty well. We tried to find a balance between not discouraging investment and not leaving any money on the table. And it's a long process in front of us here. I share Representative Crawford's concerns on the cost allocations. I share them, and as we go down the road, and I talk to the Finance Committee members, because all of a sudden I'm going to have a whole lot of time on my hands now, since I have no bills whatsoever in the legislature. I will be sharing my concerns on cost allocation and making sure that the rules are tightened up, fair to industry, so that they're clearly lined out. And I think the legislation, particularly with the price of oil that we have now, it should bring up, and the debate should turn not just from this legislation for Alaskans. I understand all the oil companies, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money for them. It's a lot of money for us. But if the debate doesn't focus on what are we going to do at low and medium prices on long-term fiscal stability for Alaska, whether it be, how are we going to get revenues at low prices, how are we going to save the money right now, in a long-term fiscal plan, we can't keep going back to the well here. I think it's going to work this time at high oil prices with gas on the horizon, but the debate has to continue and on long-term fiscal plan for the state of Alaska, which we have a lot of options available, but we seem to sometimes bog down in the process. So with that, I'd like to also thank Tim Benintendi and Sarah Gill, my staff, for they worked as hard as any of us did, if not harder, and Jim Pound that works for Representative Ramos also.
Mr.
That put in a tremendous amount of hours, weekends, nights, mornings, everything. So with that, I will remove my objection to moving House Bill 48 from resources. Is there any further objection? Representative Crawford objects. Madam Clerk, could you call the roll?
Representative Elkin.
Yes.
Representative Crawford.
No.
Representative Gatto.
Yes.
Representative Capsner.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Ledoux.
Yes.
Oh, is she allowed to vote on that?
Representative Olson.
No.
If I could... Could you avoid that roll? I'm sorry, Madam Clerk. Representative Ledoux is not eligible to vote on the telephone on this particular motion. So I hate to do that to you, but could we start again on that, please? Could we get another motion to move the bill, please?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. I'll move CS for House Bill 488 Resources, Version Y. From committee with individual recommendations as amended and attached physical notes.
There is an objection. Madam Clerk, could you call the roll?
Representative Elkin.
Yes.
Representative Crawford.
No.
Representative Gatto.
Yes.
Representative Capsner.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Co-Chair Samuels.
Yes.
Co-Chair Ramos.
Yes.
And with that, 48 is moved from committee, and see here, you got to vote no twice. So with that, I believe that we are going to cancel.
Monday?
We are going to cancel the Resources Committee meeting on Monday. My apologies to Mr. Benintendi.
Monday or Saturday?
We're canceling Saturday for sure. We're canceling Monday as well. And my apologies to the Board of Game members that we have lined up to go there, but I think we need a day off. We're adjourned.
Nice job, Mr. Chair.